everyone, it's AK. I know that you're probably dying to know what happened with my election, but you could probably figure out that I didn't win since I didn't come on and do a podcast as soon as the election was over. So there were 3 spots and there were 6 candidates. I haven't updated regularly, so I don't know how much you guys know. Anyway, so 3 spots, 6 candidates, and 3 were incumbents, and then 3 were new people. So basically, the incumbents won. So I guess our town wasn't as extremely upset with the school board and their decisions regarding coronavirus and the schools opening or closing or their protective measures and whatnot. I guess they weren't that upset since the 3 incumbents won. It was 19%, 18%, 15%. It was really close, actually. So I received over 7,700 votes, which was super exciting. I did come in 5 out of 6, but that's okay because this was my first time running for public office. And the fact that I don't have a huge presence in the town, because the 3 incumbents are already school board members, so people know their name, know who they are. One person is the husband of one of the teachers, and he also coaches football or whatever for the kids, so people already know who he is. The other person didn't really do anything. She has kids in the school system, but when she announced her candidacy, she created like a Facebook page and was kind of, you know, chatting on it and whatnot. And then we had our candidate forum, and she had some type of family emergency and, you know, couldn't come to it, but promised to put her answers to the questions that were recorded on her Facebook page. That never happened. Some people tried to reach out to her about her answers because they wanted to vote for her, and she never got back in touch with people. The part that kind of irked me is that I barely got more votes than her. So I'm kind of thinking, I worked so hard and I barely get... Okay, anyway, whatever. So I know that the other 2 that were running because of COVID and, you know, coronavirus this and, oh, we're upset, the school board and blah, blah, blah. So I actually met with the superintendent and kind of told him a little bit about myself, because I wanted him to understand that corona had no bearing on me running whatsoever. I wanted to separate myself from the other 2 because I'd been planning on running since 2018 or 2019, last year. So I wanted him to understand that my reasoning for running was deeper than just being upset about a virus and how the actions are affecting the parents or the whoever. So I wanted to set myself apart. So I met with him and I really liked him. He's a nice guy. It's kind of funny. Our educational backgrounds mirror each other. So he has a background in special education and also social studies. And he also taught U.S. history and government. And I think he taught world history too. So our backgrounds are pretty similar. So that was cool, having a superintendent of a school corp who was a history teacher. So yeah, he's a great guy. And I would like to be on the board. So what I'm doing 2020, I haven't officially, or sorry, it is 2020, 2022. I haven't officially announced it or anything, but I am going to run again. In 2 years, there will be 2 seats up for re-election. One of the seats is a family friend. She got on the board in 2018, and she worked her behind off, and she actually beat one of the incumbents. He'd been on the board for I don't know how many years, but she beat him. She came in first place. There were 2 seats and 3 people running. She came first place. So she's running for re-election, and she is a family friend. And I didn't want to run against her because it's only 2 seats. And I'm not sure if the person that is up for re-election in 2022 is running again. But she was basically kind of like, you know what? I'm going to help you. You know, we're going to basically do this together to run against the other person. And she's like, we're going to get you on this board. And I'm like, well, I don't want you to, you know, get kicked. I don't want to take your spot. And she's like, oh, no. We're both going to get on that board. So I'm excited about it because I feel like I, you know, I don't want to be cliche, but I feel like I lost for a reason. Because as you guys know, I quit my job in December. I was a teacher. I quit my job so I could work full time on this accelerated PhD program. Instead of taking 5 years, it'll take about 3. So it's hardcore, intense, hit the ground running type of work. And when I would attend the school board meetings, I would talk to the president, who was one of the ones up for re-election that won. I talked to the president and she told me that there was so much information and so overwhelming that it took her about 2 years before she actually felt comfortable being on the school board and kind of have a handle of what's going on. And so I thought to myself, I probably lost for that reason. Because if the school board is that much responsibility as soon as you take office, there is no way I could successfully be a school board member and be a PhD student at the same time. I would have to, you know, not be fully committed. I'd have to spread myself too thin, basically, because I do take the school board position seriously. I look at that just as seriously as possible because it is. The decisions made affect, you know, the entire almost 10,000 kids on our school corp. You know, the parents, the community, there's about, I want to say there's about 17,000, 18,000 people in our town. So it's a small town. So the decisions, you know, it's a lot. So I kind of feel like I lost maybe for that reason, because in 2 years, I should be almost done with my program. So the hard part is what I'm doing right now. Like, for instance, my fifth class started a couple weeks ago before the election. The first assignment was a 14-page paper. The class goes from Sunday 11:59 p.m. to Sunday 11:59 p.m. So it's a week long. So I got that assignment on Sunday when the class officially started. And by the next Sunday, I was to deliver, it's 12 to 14 page paper. And I've been in college off and on, mostly on, for over 13 years. And that was the hardest paper I have ever written in 13 years. And I was so discouraged. The class is talking about economics and public policy. Econ has always been a struggle for me, mainly because of like the formulas, the graphs, the math that's involved. Not really good at math. And, you know, trying to explain it on paper and interpret, it's just always been a struggle for me. So when I found out that this was the class, I'm like, are you kidding me? This is econ, really, right now? Are you serious? So I was discouraged, you know, really discouraged, really just kind of felt just like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? How am I gonna, you know, do this successfully? Because my other four classes, 3 I've gotten A's, 1 I got a B+. So I'm pretty killing this. I'm pretty, you know, good. I'm killing this program, doing the dang thing. And I was just really feeling some type of way about it, because the paper was about the BlackBerry panic of 2008. And I was like, the BlackBerry what? Basically, it's this author talking about the financial and banking crisis, the housing market crash, and, you know, from 2006-5 roughly to 2009, you know, the Bush administration, Obama. I mean, it was a lot. And the paper was difficult because I had to learn. That sounds really weird, but I've been in college, like I said, for over 13 years. But part of the reason I wanted to be a teacher is because I love learning. I know so much random information, it's not even funny. So very rarely when I would write papers, I'm writing about something I have no idea about. And that was what made that paper difficult, because I had no idea. I knew about it. I knew what happened 2008. You know, most people, if you were old enough to remember, most people remember. But I didn't know, you know, like the economic specifics and that kind of stuff. So I actually had to really learn about this to be able to write 12 pages over it. And it was tough. It was very frustrating. And I barely made it. I mean, my paper, it wasn't even 12 full pages. It was like maybe 11 and 3 quarters. Like I was just so done. I was just done with the paper. I just couldn't anymore. And I was just feeling so bad and blah, blah, blah. I know you want me to get to the point because I would want myself to get to the point if I was listening. Anyway, so basically, what happened was when I checked the score, I saw that I got 172.5 out of 175 points. I screamed and jumped up and down. I couldn't believe it. Because I was for sure that paper was complete BS, complete nonsense. And I wasn't sure it made sense. I was just so done and so discouraged. And when I looked to see the points that were taken off, he said that I didn't have enough sources. It was 20 sources. And I was like, I was pretty sure I had 20 sources. But he said, I didn't have enough, but the ones I did have were really good sources. So I went through and counted my sources. And I realized that I didn't even put the books in the reference page because for this course, we have two required books. He even talked about, he's like, yeah, you cited, did the in-text citations correctly. And I looked and I'm like, how did he miss that? I mean, I guess if you're a professor, you're reading 12 page papers from 8 plus people, you're probably checked out. So I guess he wasn't really paying attention to detail because he should have taken points off that I didn't cite the actual textbooks in the reference page, because if I had done that, I would have got the 20 sources. Because I'm like, I know I had 20. So that was, I mean, it was my mistake, my fault, but he also wasn't paying enough attention, which I'm not too mad about it. But he seemed to obviously really like the paper. And so that really gave me a self-esteem boost because this happened. I got the grade right after I lost the election. So it was like, I got an A on my, I lost the election, but I got an A on the hardest paper I've ever written in college. So yeah, so that's my story. So it really gave me a boost of confidence, you know, just a self-esteem boost that I can do this. I mean, I don't have a choice. I have to do it. If I get less than a B plus or less than a B minus, I think they either drop me from the program or I have to retake the class. Basically, it's not good if I get less than a B minus. If I get a C plus, it's not good. So it's just a boost, a self-esteem boost that I can do this. I've got this, you know, I'm learning a lot. That being said, today is Wednesday night. There is another 12 page paper due on Sunday night. And I have yet to actually start reading the textbooks and everything. But this is because I feel a lot better about this paper because I know about it. It's about FDR's New Deal, the economics and, you know, financial decisions behind that. And it's comparing Eisenhower. So I know a lot about that. So I'm not really freaking out too hard over that paper. But that was just a really good boost that I needed because, you know, losing sucks. No matter who you are, I don't care. You say, oh, it's okay, it's fine. But losing really sucks because nobody wants to lose. Like, it's not human nature to lose. Our nature as humans is to be the best that we can be, to beat others, competition. So losing is not something that's like hardwired inside of us. You know, as you can kind of see with the president and how he's refusing to concede and spreading fake news that the election is rigged. I was telling people, you know, if the election was rigged in Joe Biden's favor, why did Democrats lose House seats and lose local races? Why did they not control the Senate? Why, if it was rigged in his favor, because the ballots, it's the same. You have the same, the president, the senator, all of the stuff is on the same ballot. So if it was cheating, wouldn't the Democrats have like swept the election, like totally every seat that was open, like all just swept the entire thing? Part of the issue is that, you know, he's coming after his own people because, you know, the Republicans really feel some type of way about all of this. And Georgia, one of the states that Biden was able to flip, is run by a Republican governor, a Trump ally, and they also have a Republican Secretary of State. So basically, Republicans run that state. So my thing is, if there was any type of, you know, voter fraud or, you know, anything wrong in Georgia, don't you think they would have, like, totally blown the whistle and got to that and figured that out? I remember reading, I think it was the Sec State that said there was no evidence of voter fraud or anything. So it's like, to keep pushing that narrative doesn't make sense, because Republicans, and that's kind of why it's taking so long. I was reading about different Democrats and they're saying because the Republicans kept spreading this fake news for months, we tried everything in our power, everything possible to make sure that this is legit. So that's why, like, the counting is taking so long, because they're doing everything by the book. They have different, you know, there's some fake news about how Republicans aren't allowed in. They are, you know, it's just a disaster. So, and I understand the president, you know, he's a winner. You know, he's a businessman. He's gone bankrupt, but he's built himself back up. Losing this presidential election, I want to say it's probably the worst thing that's ever happened to him in his life. Because Trump doesn't lose. He's not a loser. And this is a thing that no matter what he does, he can't get it back. Like, he can't, you know, I mean, technically the only way it could happen is if on December 14th, when the Electoral College votes, they vote for Trump. That's the only way that he could remain president of the United States of America. Because if you don't know, we have a constitutional republic. When we vote for president, we're voting for people who vote for us, blah, blah, blah. So, like, for instance, in 2016, you know, the Democrats weren't flipping out that hard that Hillary won the popular vote by over 3 million and Trump won the electoral vote. You know, we weren't really, you know, tripping that hard. You didn't hear people, oh, yeah, you know, Hillary, this, this, and this. Nobody, I mean, people cared, but it wasn't like we were just, like, up in arms about it because, you know, we knew, oh, you know, we just accepted Trump won, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it doesn't really happen a lot in history. I think this is like the fourth or fifth time, because usually when you win the popular vote, you win the electoral vote, because the people that we elect are supposed to vote based on how we voted, but it doesn't always happen. So this time around, Joe Biden won the popular vote by over 4 million. So it's like, you know, more people did the popular vote this time. So he was higher in numbers popular vote. So it would make sense that he's ahead in the electoral vote. So one thing I think is interesting, you know, the Republicans and Trump and everybody, you know, we're all kind of like, yeah, Republicans won House seats. They won governorships. They won this, this, and this. But the presidency was rigged. So it's like, you can't claim both. You can't claim that the election was rigged while praising the wins that you did get. So I just don't know. And I'm really frustrated because, to be honest, it's really a matter of national security. The Trump administration is refusing to concede. And I forgot the woman's position, but she's basically in charge of signing the documents that give the Biden camp access to the funds and the information they need that you usually get when you win the election. So you can be prepared and know what's going on when you take office in January. So as of right now, Biden doesn't have access to that information. So if Trump still refuses and Biden doesn't get anything until he steps in that office at January 20th, 12:01 p.m., we're screwed. Not only that, but right now, what's happening at the end of the day is ultimately affecting the American people. If I was a country or if I was an organization or whoever and I wanted to attack America right now, this would be the perfect opportunity to do it, because we have this internal fighting amongst our political parties, our president and the, you know, the high-ranking officials. So this is a matter of national security, because this would be the perfect opportunity to attack us, whether it be a cyber attack, you know, a drone strike or any type of attack. And the thing with that would be, who would you blame? You know, you can't blame Joe Biden because he hasn't taken an office yet. Not only that, but he doesn't even have access to the information. So if some type of drone strike or cyber attack would happen, like right now, it would be Trump. And I mean, I think even the Republicans would have to, like, you can't blame anybody else. So it's like, if that were to happen, like, right now, it would just be a disaster. And I'm really praying and hoping that doesn't happen, because we need a peaceful transition of power. Not only that, but as Americans, the United States, we are the country that the world looks to follow, you know, and they see all this crap going on inside of our country. Why would they want to follow and model that? You know, there's some world leaders that have congratulated Biden, and there's some, notably North Korea, China, and Russia, the quote-unquote dictators or whatever, the ones who have not, mainly because Trump has cozied up to them over the years, and so they haven't congratulated Biden yet, and probably won't until, you know, he takes office, to be honest. And I'm just kind of like, this is not okay. It's really bothering me, because it's like, where's our influence and our impact on the world? Like, this is just embarrassing. You know, we've prided ourselves on being the beacon of hope, the shining city upon a hill, you know, Ronald Reagan and John Winthrop. But we're not doing that right now. We're not. It's a disaster. We're in shambles. And it's like, how can we be that beacon of hope and that model, that shining city, with this nonsense happening? You know? And in 2016, when Hillary lost, Republicans were like, oh, she lost, accept it, move on. Now that Trump lost, it's not accept it and move on. It's, oh, it was voter fraud, recount the votes, dead people were voting, all this kind of crap, instead of accepting it. And this time it's even more legit, because Biden won the popular and the electoral vote. So it's kind of like, I haven't seen anybody referring back to that in 2016, how Hillary lost the popular, but Trump won the electoral. So I haven't seen anybody saying that, but it's really frustrating. But I know that Trump has been pushing this agenda, this narrative, for months, that if he loses, it's because it was voter fraud and blah, blah, blah. You know, but even Fox News, you know, people are just tired. You know, they're just tired of this bipartisanship, this nonsense. And it's like, at the end of the day, this is just tearing our country further apart. And it's like delegitimizing Biden before he even takes office. You know, the Biden presidency, it's like, oh, he cheated, that's how he got in office, and this and this. And it's like, are you serious right now? So Biden's been in politics for almost 50 years. He knows how to play the game. The idea of him being a socialist is laughable. He's like a moderate Republican. You know, he's old school, knows how to play the game. One of the things he did in his time in the Senate was make deals. He was able to bring people together on both sides of the aisle to make things happen. That's what he's known for. So the people that are in the Senate, they're still in the Senate, they know that this is Joe Biden. You know, it'll be the second time that he's been in office during the middle of a crisis. When him and Obama went in 2009, it was, you know, the worst, you know, economic crisis since the Great Depression. And now he's going to take office in the worst pandemic since 1919 or 1918, whenever the flu happened. So it's like, you know, Biden was pretty good under pressure. One thing people were talking about was, you know, Obama was very inexperienced. And one of the reasons why he picked Biden was because he was very experienced in Congress and knew what to do, knew what to say, knew how to get people to see the bigger picture, to compromise. So one of the ways that Obamacare passed through Congress was he sent Joe Biden out there to make deals and to compromise and to explain and to get people on the side, because Obama couldn't do that. That's something that Biden is known for, you know. And the idea is, it's laughable about him wanting to defund the police and all this kind of crap, the Antifa, this progressive left nonsense. And it's like, he wrote the 94 crime bill. He picked an attorney general as his VP. Like, no, just no. And, you know, I was reading about the cabinet situation, and people are saying they want to push to get Bernie Sanders. And I'm like, no. Bernie Sanders is the last person that needs to be in the Biden cabinet. Like, the last person on earth. That would be a disaster. So I know that Biden does have to kind of still appeal and pander towards the progressives, but I don't think he should put one in his cabinet. I don't want Bernie Sanders to be involved anyway, but if he wants to put a progressive in there, I don't think it should be a cabinet position. Maybe like assistant secretary or assistant, not one of the main things, because he will have to compromise. He knows that that's part of how he won the progressive wing. Okay, we don't want Trump. Biden's not who we want, but he's not Trump. He still, you know, kind of sees things our way, that he's not as extreme as we want him to be. We're going to go ahead and vote for him. So he does know he has to still kind of, you know, keep them happy, keep them at bay, so to speak. But I don't think that's a good idea. And he knows it's not a good idea. If Biden wants to continue to be the moderate that he is, the one who can make the deals on both sides of the aisle, his cabinet has to reflect that. He can't have these radical Antifa progressives, you know, defund the police people in his cabinet. That's not going to happen. Not only that, the Republicans aren't going to confirm those people if they still control the Senate, which depends on the race in January in Georgia. So it's like he already knows that, you know, he already knows what he has to do. So, but one thing that, oh, today's Veterans Day, by the way. I'm an Army brat. My dad was in the military for almost 30 years. So Veterans Day has always held a special place in my heart. One thing that really bothered me over the last 4 years was seeing how the American flag was mistreated by both sides. It kind of seemed to me like the Republicans, this is my own personal observation opinion, that the Republicans started to use the American flag in a threatening manner, if that makes sense, kind of like the new Confederate flag. Because I don't understand people, oh, the American flag is offensive and this. I'm like, how is it offensive? But when I really started to read into it and look at it, it made sense that people would be offended or feel some type of way about the American flag being flown next to a Trump flag or a Confederate flag, or it was like it wasn't associated with freedom, you know, unity, liberty, you know, the traditional American values, personal responsibility, the American dream. You know, it wasn't associated with that in that manner being used by those people. So I understood why people, not that I think they're right to feel that. I mean, I guess you can't really tell somebody they're right or not right to feel a certain way, but I understood the logic behind their feelings. Another part that bothered me on the left, you've got the progressives, the Gen Z, the younger, you know, the younger crowd stomping on the flag, burning the flag, tearing up the flag, disrespecting the flag. It's all within their constitutional right. There's a court case in the 80s that, you know, gave them the right to do that. And it just really broke my heart to see that, you know, because it's like, oh yeah, it's just a flag. It's just a piece of cloth, but it's really not. It's what the flag represents. But I understood their frustration as well. What those young kids have seen over the last 4 years, that flag doesn't mean anything to them. Those words in the pledge, it doesn't mean anything to them because of what they've seen over the last 4 years. So it's like, I don't think that's right either, but, you know, to do that to the flag. But either way, left or the right, misusing the flag, it's really bothered me. And it's just disheartening to see these young kids curse America and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, this is the only country you've ever known. Many of them haven't even left the country. This is all they know. How can you say you hate this country and all this kind of stuff? But it just really, it breaks my heart. And I'm a history teacher as well. You know, I've studied politics, history, that kind of thing. So I do hear the stories of how the kids feel. And I can't explain to them my experience, because them growing up, especially if they're like 16, you know, they were a preteen when this stuff started happening. So this is like all they know, the division and all this kind of stuff. So I understand why they feel the way they do. But when I was watching the celebrations of Biden's victory on the different news networks, one thing that I saw, and I was so excited, I was almost in tears. Actually, I probably did cry at some point, that I saw all of a sudden American flags appeared. You know, they had the Biden flag, the gay pride flag, Black Lives Matter, you know, all these other flags, but the American flag started to appear. giant ones, like huge. And then Biden's people were handing them out. I mean, people were waving flags and they were interviewing people. And they interviewed people who, you know, look different, quote unquote, a woman wearing a hijab, you know, immigrants or whatever, or even just, you know, regular Americans. They were interviewing a variety of people. And a lot of them said that for the first time in their life, they can wave the American flag with pride and believe in the ideas and believe in it because of this election. You know, that what Joe Biden winning represented for them. They said they were no longer ashamed. They were proud to be an American. They were proud to wave the flag. And of course I'm thinking, you know, you shouldn't have felt that way anyway. You should be able to, but I empathize, I understand. But it was just, I mean, these are young people too that are saying these things. And, you know, they're waving the flag, you know, they're not being disrespectful, you know, burning it, tearing it, like they're waving the flag, like proudly waving the flag. Some of them were singing the Star Spangled Banner. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It was just like a complete transformation, you know? And I'm like, you know, the Democrats should have never let that happen in the first place. Let them take over the flag, so to speak. But I kind of thought, you know, the way Joe Biden is, he is a peacemaker and he empathizes, you know, most people know his background story that, you know, his wife and kids were in a car accident. His wife and baby daughter died. His two boys were seriously injured. You know, he went through an extreme amount of loss. And then, you know, fast forward 40 years, and then one of the boys that survived in that car crash died of brain cancer, an aggressive brain cancer. And it's like, that's a lot of sadness to go through in a lifetime. And I was watching about it. And he was saying basically that, I mean, he didn't say these words, so don't quote me. You know, Joe Biden, he didn't say this. This is what I got from what he was saying. That basically, if his boys hadn't survived, he would have killed himself because that was just so much loss. But his boys were the reason to live. And I just thought that's so deep, you know? So when Biden would go overseas or talk to parents who lost their kids in military service or just lost loved ones in general, that he was being genuine in his feelings and empathy with them. He could definitely understand. You know, Bo didn't die in combat, but he was still in the military, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, just the fact that he has those feelings and he's able to connect with people on that level. I thought, you know, if anybody at this point can heal this country and promote Americanism, you know, if you will, or unity among people, it's Biden. I really think he's the one that can do it. Because he's a peacemaker. He's middle of the road. He's not extreme. He's not, you know, usually belligerent or angry. You know, he's been through a lot of loss and trauma in his own life. He's able to relate to a lot of people in this country, especially right now. So I really think that he can be the one to do that. Now, of course, you have the Republicans who are upset, you know, still want to paint him as a communist socialist, want to destroy America and make us all slaves or whatever. But I also was reading about the progressive, the squad, the AOC wing of the Democratic Party, and how they weren't embracing the idea. If you watched his speech, his acceptance speech, the idea of unity, bringing everybody together, they were talking about, you know, calling out these Trumplicans and all this kind of stuff and making a list. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That is not what Biden is trying to do. He's trying to unify people, bring the parties together, bring the people together. We're not Democrat, we're Americans. And it's like, they've got to get behind this. Because if they don't get behind this, it's not really going to work. You know, it's kind of hard to want the Democrats and Republicans to work together if you've got these progressive left-wing people who were still, you know, I just feel like we got to just shut up and compromise. We have to do it. If we want to bring our country back together, we have to do it. Because division creates chaos, as we see. And that's how you destroy a society. And because we are an exceptional nation, in the sense of our country isn't founded on a specific religion or race or ethnicity. It's literally founded on a group of ideas. It was a social experiment. Our country is very unique in that sense. So if we aren't held together by believing in those same values, there's nothing to hold us together. Which is why it's so important to bring everybody back in the fold, you know? And it's like, to see this happen, it's like, no, this isn't how it works. You know, that's how you destroy a society. That's what makes societies weak and susceptible. When they're vulnerable with whatever's going on in their specific society, their country, outside forces can attack, take over, whatever they're going to do, because the people are distracted. The people are at each other's throats. You know, we've got outside threats, but we're fighting against each other. And it doesn't matter how you feel politically, like your ideology, we need to get back to, yes, you're Jewish, you're Muslim, you're atheist, you're Black, you're white, Hispanic, Asian, gay, straight, transgender, whatever it is, but we are all Americans. Now, if you ask people, what does it mean to you to be an American, you're going to get a lot of different answers. Like, a lot. You know, because it's not a race or religion. So, but some of the answers will probably involve freedom. Freedom of opportunity. Freedom of religion. Freedom of speech. The freedoms that we have guaranteed to us as Americans and our Constitution. That's something that's important. Especially people who have fled communist countries or, you know, were... they didn't have the ability to speak their mind or to believe a certain religion or to do any of that stuff. Those people that came here, they really value that freedom. And Americans, you know, natural born Americans obviously take that for granted because we've never been in a situation where, you know, our lives have been threatened because of whatever, our head's going to get cut off or whatever it may be that other people have experienced. So they come here and they're like, freedom. That's, you know, the main reason I wanted the freedom, that kind of thing. You know, you have people that say the American dream, the opportunities that you have here. You can literally do whatever you want. You know, you've got people that come from poverty, from other countries, you know, can't read or write, and they end up being millionaires, or not even that extreme. They end up, you know, getting an education and being successful, not necessarily a millionaire, but basically better off than what they were in their home country, which is why they wanted to come here. So it's like, that's very important. And that's an idea that we should hold on to. We have to hold on to it because that's what our country was built around. That's what we were founded on. You know, basically freedom and opportunity. You know, and it's like, if we don't have that unity and that belief and those founding values, we have nothing. We're no longer a country. And it's kind of like, I do think that Biden has the ability to unify, but the people have to be receptive, because in order for it to work, you have to want it to work. You have to set aside your differences and come together. And I'm really, really hoping, now I know Trump is really influencing the Republican Party, since he is the leader of the Republican Party as the president, you know, but there are plenty of Republicans and senators and Congress people. They've been in the game a whole lot longer than 4 years, and they know how it's supposed to work. They know how the government works. And it's kind of like, are you guys still going to allow this to happen? This division? You know, it's like, how long is this going to continue? These seasoned politicians understand government. They know the Constitution. They've been in office for X amount of years. They understand the importance of unity and compromise and all these kind of things. You know, that's what makes America great. The ability to pursue your dreams, to have freedom, but then also the ability to compromise and work together with your... Biden's speech, he said, not to view each other as enemies, but as Americans. So your fellow Americans who you disagree with, you know, that's what makes us great. The ability to do that, the ability to be a multiracial, multicultural nation united by ideas. Like, that's a crazy thing. And if the founding fathers and those in the 15, 16, 1700s were alive today, or if they came back to life, they'd be like, holy crap, it actually worked. It worked. You know, I mean, this is, it's crazy to think about if you really think about it, you know. And it's like, yeah, you know, we have all these dark spots in history, but who doesn't? No country's perfect. People are flawed. There's going to be flawed things, but look how far we've come. That's one thing I hate about, I don't know what teachers exactly teach in school. I know it's not blind patriotism, which they shouldn't teach blind patriotism, but they shouldn't teach blind hatred either. You know, it's important to acknowledge all of our past, the slavery, the racism, discrimination, all of it. It shouldn't be sugarcoated. It needs to be told. But at the same time, children shouldn't feel the need to hate their country or to be ashamed to be an American or ashamed of their country. None of that. They should also be taught, yes, this happened, but look how far we've come. So it's like, well, we acknowledge the past. We acknowledge it happened. It was bad. But we also acknowledged, you know, how far we've come. And I think that's what kids are missing. What they're getting. Like, they're, oh, the past, you know, there was slavery and genocide and wars and discrimination and women being second class, you know, all this kind of stuff. But it's like, look how far we've come today. That's what's important. It's like, don't be stuck in the past. Don't be stuck 400, 300, 200 years ago. You have to move forward. You have to look and compare how far we've come today. You know, I mean, Barack Obama becoming president was a huge accomplishment. You know, in the beginning, black people were slaves. So it's like, to come from slavery to a black man holding the highest office in the land, that's insane. That's progress. That's like beyond progress. And it's like, Obama being president, did that mean racism, discrimination, all these bad things went away? No. But it meant, in spite of all of that, a black man could actually become the president of this great country. And I don't think people are thinking about it like that. And it sucks, you know, that they're not, but I understand and I get why they're not. But it's like, you have to think about it that way. Like Kamala Harris, this is a huge accomplishment. You know, she's so many firsts. She's the first woman, first of all, the first woman in the history of this country to be elected as vice president. She's also the first black person. She's not African-American. I'm never going to call her that. You know, not all black people are African. Not all Africans are black. She's black. Her father's from Jamaica. So she's not African-American. She's just black. But the first black person and woman, and the first Asian person, woman. I think they feel the need to call her South Asian, because when you think Asia, you don't think India. You think like China, Japan, Vietnam, like the normal Asians. Because I'm like, why say South Asian? She is Asian, but whatever. South Asian, if you will. The first Indian American. You know, not only that, but both of her parents were immigrants. Her parents came here for a better life. They came here to go to college. Her mother ended up being a research scientist trying to come up with a cure for breast cancer. Like, this young woman from India ended up having that as an accomplishment. Now, she died of cancer, I think it was like 2009, so she's not with us today. But I mean, just, you know, how she would feel about her daughter, her child, you know, like, it's just amazing, the accomplishments. Now, Kamala being VP, does that mean sexism, racism, discrimination, all this kind of stuff is going to go away? No, it doesn't. But it means, in spite of all of that, she was able to accomplish that. And that's because Americans voted. Like, with Obama, Americans voted for that. They didn't just take office. They didn't just, like a dictator, like, oh, I'm going to be in power, you know, you don't want it, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to have somebody kill. You know, people, it's a democracy. People voted for that. So the fact that people voted for these people of color to be in these offices, that means that we've come a long way. We've made progress as Americans, as a country. So it's kind of offensive. No, it's not. It is offensive to hear people, whether they be young or old, focus on, oh, slavery in 1600. And, you know, which is why the 1619 Project is crap. I had an email from a parent that asked me how I felt about that. And I basically kind of went off and I was kind of like, you know, if I am on the board, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure they don't introduce that nonsense into our schools. I said it a little more professional than that, because it's a lie. We were not founded on the idea of slavery. That wasn't what it was. And Nicole Hannah Jones completely misses the point, which is historically inaccurate. But not only that, she wants to say that America was a slaveocracy, which is just foolishness. But, you know, wants to say our start date was 1619. The first slaves came over, blah, blah, blah. Not 1776. But my whole thing is, if you want to say that, you have to look at where the slaves came from. Where did they come from? They came from Africa. At this time, they were legally buying them at this. They weren't stealing them. So you have to look, you want to blame the United States and say that they were created as a slaveocracy in 1619, but where did they get the slaves from? The black Africans sold black Africans to white Europeans, and they brought them over to what is now the United States of America. So you can't do that without going back farther. Not only that, but slavery was a common practice everywhere. It's not native to America or Africa. It's everywhere. It was everywhere. But the thing that really bothers me with that project, and they're indoctrinating these kids with this nonsense, and it's like, no. Slavery was horrible. It should have never happened, you know, blah, 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 the usual talking points. But at the same time, you can't blame the colonists, the Europeans, the Americans, because it was a slave trade. They were trading people for, you know, natural resources, clothes, whatever, you know, money, buy and sell from Africans. So you can't teach these young kids that America was founded on slavery, because where did it come from? You know, and it really bothers me as a historian, political scientist, a teacher, it really bothers me that schools have adopted this nonsense. You know, and that's just the first part of the first issue I have with it, is the first issue that 1619 is the founding date. It's crap. But it just, it goes to show it's creating more division. Because if we're teaching these kids, we need to teach kids about slavery. Like, it's out of the question to ignore that. But if we teach these kids that their country was founded upon slavery and oppression of black people, how are they going to feel about the country now? If we harp on that and keep beating that into them, slavery, slavery, black people oppressed, slavery, victimhood mentality, all this kind of crap. And especially because it's little kids too that this is happening to, this curriculum. How are they going to feel about their country now? Are they not going to learn about how far America has come? You know, and it's kind of like ancestors, slaves, you know, whatever. They're like turning over in their graves right now. Because, believe it or not, slaves actually fought in the Revolutionary War and all the wars slaves fought in when they were still slaves. But they fought for freedom. Even though they didn't have it, they fought for freedom. You know, slaves actually celebrated the 4th of July on July 5th. Because they knew, and they knew that one day their ancestors would have freedom. They literally believed in these ideas, even though it didn't even apply to them. They were 3/5 of a person. They were considered property, but they still believed this. They still believed and had faith in that. And it's like, for these people to feel like that and, you know, die knowing, you know, my ancestors are going to, you know, one day be free, have the same opportunities as the white man and so on. And to know that their ancestors, the kids today, are being taught that America was founded on slavery and oppression and creating this victimhood and mentality, they're turning over in their freaking graves. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's not what I didn't fight for my ancestors to learn about slavery, learn about slavery being the central idea of the creation of this country. That's not what I gave my life for. You know, even as recent as Martin Luther King Jr., same thing. You know, he grew up in a time where there was, you know, lynching, Jim Crow, couldn't use the same bathroom, couldn't use the same restaurant, you know, anything. It was segregation. But what did he do in his speeches? He constantly quoted the Declaration of Independence. They waved American flags in their marches. Like, they believed in the ideas too. And it's like, I'm just scratching my head. Like, I don't understand, but I mean, I just wish it would stop, because these kids are impressionable. They're malleable, you know, they're impressionable. They don't know. That's why we're teachers. We teach them. And it's just really bothering me that this is what the kids are being taught, and they're not learning about what happened after. You know, how did Obama get to be president? You know, what happened? We go from Black people being slaves, you know, to being segregated, Jim Crow, the lynchings, the beatings, the dogs, the fires, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, up. And then we have a Black man become president. Why are we not teaching the kids the importance of progress and the importance of the mindset of the American people, you know, changing? You know, I mean, and you can't say, oh, he won because all the Black people voted for him. Black people are like 13% of the population. So there's no way he could have won with only 13% of the population voting. So a lot of white people voted for him twice. He won twice. So it's like, you can't feed the kids this nonsense, because that's what produces them, you know, gives them this idea that their country is horrible and they should hate it. So if something as simple as Joe Biden's election can totally turn around this whole narrative, I'll take it. I wish I could like teach every kid in America. I wish I could be their teacher or whatever, you know, teach them the truth, the facts, you know, and not focus on the negatives, the positive, the present, moving forward, you know. And I just feel like, again, it just warmed my heart seeing those kids wave the flag. So I'm like, if that's what it took, you know, to get Trump out of office, to get Joe Biden in office, to get these kids to, but I also think that the kids would be more receptive to learning, to really learning about America after slavery, you know, the whole oppression thing, really learning about the change, because what they will see, you know, and I guess that is important in the process. But whatever it is, I just really want it to happen. It's just really disheartening to see these young kids feel this way. Now, they're totally valid in their feelings, you know, that's not, they're not wrong to feel a certain way, but the information they're getting is wrong. And it's frustratingly wrong. I'm like, no, it's not what happened. No, stop it. You know? And it's just like, I don't know. I wish I could be like America's teacher or something. I don't know. We got to teach the kids. We have to talk about. And that's one thing about what makes America great again. Okay, MAGA. Anyway, that's another thing that makes us so great, is that we've come so far, you know, in a short amount of time too. Like, our country was founded officially, you know, 1776, when Thomas Jefferson declared independence. So from 1776 to 2020, that's a very short amount of time to progress how far we have. You know, I'm just kind of like, I'm just dumbfounded. It's just bothering me so bad. But I really hope with Biden's election that these young people, they can learn to love America, or the older people can learn to love America again. You know, and this whole cancel culture nonsense, like, hopefully we won't cancel the flag, we won't cancel the Star Spangled Banner, because it says the word slave in it, and it's like, people really need to read the whole, it's a poem, the whole poem. But the thing is, like, who knew there were three verses? I think there's four. Who knew there were four verses anyway? But my interpretation when I read it, because he talks about the hireling, you know, obviously the British hired people to fight for them, whether they be the German Hessians, the slaves, or whoever, they hired people. So when I was reading that, I thought he was just kind of poking fun that, you know, you guys fought for the British, whether you were hired or a slave, promised freedom, you guys lost, haha. Guess what? You know, you're screwed, you lost. I didn't take it as, oh, you know, slavery, when I read it, that's how I took it, that he was being funny. That he was, and what we would say today, throwing shade at the ones who chose to fight for the British because they lost. But of course, they want to talk about, oh, his family was, they were rich slave owners, this. A lot of people were rich slave owners. A lot. As my mother always says, when you learn better, you do better. So it's like, were these men flawed human beings? Of course they were. They had slaves and do all these bad, of course they did. But let's not cancel them or disregard all the good things they've done because they owned slaves and mistreated women. You know, everybody's made a bad decision in their life. And it's like, you know, say, for instance, we give people second chances when they get out of prison. Guy's in prison for 20 years for running a drug ring. He gets out of prison, gets a second chance. Well, this is kind of a bad example because having a felony conviction, he kind of is, you know, known for the rest of his life by his conviction. But my point being that, you know, say it's like your dad, say it's like a family member. When he gets out after 20 years, do you look at him and say, "Dad, you're just a criminal, you're just a convict, you're just a drug dealer, just a drug lord. That's all you do. That's all you are. That's I'm defining you by your mistakes." Or do you say, "Dad, I know that you were a drug dealer, you were in prison for 20 years, but I love you. You're still my father. I want to help you make your life better. I want to help you better yourself." Right? So shouldn't we say the same thing about the people who founded this country? Again, I really have high hopes for the Biden presidency because seeing the flags appear and the people waving and crying and cheering. And it wasn't even about, you know, "Oh, Biden won, Trump lost." I mean, people were really emotional about the fact that they felt like they could love America. They could love America again. You know, and I'm just like, that's amazing. They should always love America, but I get it. So it's like, that's one step getting closer to the unity and everything, you know, like, I don't know. It's just the identity politics, just this division. It's so disheartening. And it's ridiculous. It's like, why can't we all just be American? Like, we're always going to have racism, sexism, discrimination, xenophobia, all these isms. We're people. People are flawed. We're always going to have these things, and it's never going to be perfect. The only thing we can do is move forward from what's going on. We have to move forward. We can't focus on the past, and we can't focus on the present. We actually have to focus on the future. Because it could only get better from here. It can't get worse. There's no way it can get worse. If getting worse would mean going back to the 1700s and making black people slaves. That's never going to happen. So America cannot get worse than it is right now. It's impossible. We can only get better from here. And we have to, as a country, as Americans, we have to focus on the future and how to better ourselves. We need to unify. The identity politics, set it aside. You know, of course, you know, language, culture, religion, race, ethnicity, all that stuff is valid. And it's a thing, you know, it's important, but it shouldn't be more important than being an American, than being unified as an American. It shouldn't be more important. We need to get back to embracing the original ideas, the main one being freedom. You know, people talk about, "Oh, we're not free, we're still not free, black people, we're still not free, and we're still slaves." My thing is, the fact that you're able to say that and not get lynched, I kind of think that means you're free. The fact that you're able to get on YouTube and trash America and talk about how black people are still slaves and not free, I think that makes you kind of free. It's just ridiculous, you know. I mean, again, people's feelings are valid, but it's like, you can't talk about still being slaves, still being in chains when you're not. You're really not. You've got successful black people in this country who came from nothing. Not even just like immigrants. I mean, like, you know, native-born American, black Americans, you know, who came from nothing. Oprah Winfrey, for instance. She's a billionaire, you know? And it's like, literally started from the bottom and now she's there. Yes, I just did a Drake song reference, you know, get over it. But it's like, just looking at somebody like Oprah, you know, just, and it's like, you can't say that, because now Oprah's a bad example, because I mean, she's a billionaire, but I mean, I'm being extreme. Even somebody, you know, like somebody whose parents grew up in the hood or something, and now they live in a nice house and have to own their own business. Something as simple as that. The fact that black people are able to do that, they have the freedom to do that. Does that mean that barriers won't be in the way? No, it doesn't mean that. But it means that in spite of all of these barriers or whatever's going on, you can still do it. You know, you can still own a business. You can still, all these things, you can still do it. Even if people get in your way, even if there's discrimination, even if there's racism, all this stuff happening, you can still rise above it and push forward. And I feel like identity politics takes that away. Oh, I'm black, so it's racism, and I'm going to be treated bad, discriminated. Oh, I'm a Muslim, so people are going to think I'm a terrorist, and I wear a hijab, or I'm gay. People are going to hate me because I'm gay. I'm not going to be able to do anything because I'm gay. You know, it's just... We can't feel that way. We have to look at the future, the positives, how far we've come as a country, and how far we still have to go. There's always room for improvement. And again, it can only get better from here. It cannot get worse. Wow, this podcast totally turned into something it was not intended to be. And holy crap, I've been talking for an hour. I'm sorry, guys. It wasn't supposed to be that long. I just felt really like convicted, I guess, to speak on this, you know, thinking about the election and stuff and what it means for people and what I hope it means for our country, that it heals. And I don't care how you feel. I don't care if you voted for Biden, you voted for Trump, how you are politically, Republican, I don't care how you feel about it. You know, so you might be offended or whatever. I don't care if you're offended or not. I mean, it's a free country, freedom of speech, one of the freedoms that we enjoy, right? But I want you to set aside differences and whatever you're thinking and just think about it. Just think about how important it is for us to become United States again. The United States of America. Our people have to, we have to. Because if we don't, we have nothing. And that's just horrible to feel that way, like to think that. You know, that if we don't have, we're nothing, like literally. Because our country is very unique and exceptional in its founding, there's nothing holding us or tying us together. Nothing. Except the belief and acceptance of those founding ideas. And the more I think about it, I'm just like, you know, again, what the heck are people teaching these kids? You know, I mean, I've never taught, I mean, I'm just one person, but I'm also very different. I've never tried to teach my kid. You know, even they would ask questions, you know, what about slavery? Or what about, you know, whatever the questions they would ask, I would always spin it positively. Yes, slavery existed. Yes, it was horrible. Yes, it was bad. Or yes, black people got killed or lynched. You know, Native Americans were killed. Women, you know, all the negative things. But I would say, but this happened. But that happened. But, you know, yes, this bad stuff happened, but look how far we've come. The people progressed. They added amendments to the Constitution. Women could vote. Black people were people and not property. I mean, all these things to look forward to. And when I would tell the kids that, they would kind of sit back and like digest and process and be like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool when you think about it. Like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, I know I'm right. Duh. No, but just because, you know, presenting the information to the kids in a way that you can find good out of bad or progress, it's important to them, especially in this society. Everything's so negative. People are just miserable. It's important. You know, I've been reading about Ronald Reagan a lot because, you know, Republicans keep bringing up Ronald Reagan. And I was watching his farewell address in the 90s when he did a peaceful transition of power to George H.W. Bush. But he was talking about informed patriotism and teaching kids how to love America and what it meant to be an American and the ideas and this and this. And I thought, he was really right about that. You know, like, what are we teaching our kids? But he talked about how it started at the dinner table. It starts at home. And then it goes out, school, church, community, and et cetera. But it's not there anymore. It's not really at home, probably because people don't care. They don't know. They weren't raised that way, you know, and it's like school. It's like, where are kids getting this? I was reading different surveys talking about Gen Z are the least patriotic. You know, you ask them, are they proud of being American? They say no, they hate this kind of, all these kind of stuff. I'm like, are you kidding? But it's like, it's because they're not learning the the real, all of the facts. You know, I mean, patriotism is not waving the flag blindly. I love America, sing the Star Spangled Banner, hand over your heart, you know, thank you for your service. That's not what being an American is. Or even, well, I was going with patriotism, but that's not what being an American is either. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, take that back. It can be for some people. But patriotism is loving your country, pointing out its faults, and wanting to help it do better. So for the kids saying they hate their country, they're not proud to be an American, why? Because as an American, your duty is to help make this country better. But again, I think the definitions of like patriotism and kind of like semantics, the words people use kind of throw people off. But it's like, that's literally what patriotism is. Patriotism is loving your country enough to want it to do and be better. Continually push for growth. To continue to expand the freedoms and make sure they cover everybody or whatever the situation may be. That everybody feels accepted, you know, has the same rights as every other American. And I just think that whoever's teaching these kids, they're totally missing the point, because if they weren't, the kids wouldn't feel that way. Because you spend time at school, more time at school than anywhere else, so they wouldn't feel that way if they were learning this in school. You know, so Ronald Reagan was right. You know, it's not about blind patriotism, it's informed patriotism. We gotta know what's going on. We have to know what happened to know where we are today and how we can improve for the future. You know? And people are saying, oh yeah, well, it took all this time to get a woman to be VP, blah, 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 whatever. But it's like, yeah, it took all that time, but it still happened. You know, every other vice president in the history of this country has been a white man. So it's like, yeah, it took a long time, but guess what? It happened. There's no timeline on it, but it happened. You know, Obama being elected, a black man being elected, it happened. Not only him being black, but his name, Barack Hussein Obama II. Like his name, though. Like, we know his father was Kenyan, and he was, it's a Arabic, you know, name or whatever. But just like his name too. I mean, Barack Obama. And it's just like, yes, we have all these injustices and all this stuff that happens and has happened. But look at how far we've come. The people, you know, that are protesting in the streets, it's like, you look how far we've come. But I guess at the same time, it's really hard. It's really hard for young people to think like that when all they've seen is the complete opposite. So I guess I mean, it's just so frustrating for me, because, you know, I don't know, because I'm older and it's like, I remember this, but they don't. They weren't even alive. Or they were toddlers. Like, they don't know. They don't remember. It's not there for them. This is what they know. This is the America that they've seen. And they hate it. I'm just like, oh my gosh. So I'm really hoping that this Biden presidency, you know, I really hope Trump comes around. He probably won't. He's probably not going to do any of the traditional things. I really hope they do end up signing the paperwork and letting Biden get access to the information he needs. You know, I don't that's dependent on Trump's concession. I know concession is traditional, but I really hope Biden gets the information he needs to be successful, because it's like, you're setting him up for failure before he even takes office. But I really hope, and I do believe, that Biden has the ability to do that. He has the ability to unite and heal the country, to be that peacemaker, to talk sense into people on both sides of the aisle, you know? Because he's never been a radical. I mean, I've followed his career pretty much since Obama. I mean, I knew who he was, but, you know, you don't really care about people unless they're, you know, in the spotlight. It's like, okay, yeah, Senator Joe Biden from Delaware. Okay, cool. And I was like, oh, Vice President Joe Biden? Oh, let's check this guy out. So I've, you know, and it's just like, he's overcome so much in his life, and he's not bitter. He's not a bitter man. And that's that stuff he's got, that's enough to make people bitter and just hate the world and just, you know, but he seems to be a really positive guy that loves this country and that looks to improve it. Now, the way he wants to improve it or how or whatever, it's, you know, the politics. But at the end of the day, I believe that he genuinely loves this country and he wants to see it do better. I believe having Kamala Harris by his side, he can make that happen. Because she's an inspiration to a whole lot of people. The different groups that, you know, she fits in, a whole lot of people. I mean, it's, and especially me as a woman, especially as women. I mean, number one, as a woman, you know, you can tell a little girl, hey, you see what Kamala Harris did? You can do it too, or go higher. You can be president. My mom told me when I was 3, she asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. When I told the story, I thought I was 4. She said I was 3. And, you know, she was expecting like a generic answer, like a doctor, a police officer, a prince, you know, a mommy or a teacher, you know, just a random, you know, kid answer. And she said, you looked at me and said, I want to be the president of the United States of America. I said, what? And she was like, I was like, what did my 3-year-old just say to me? And she's like, I don't know how you knew what that was. And she's like, so you were destined to, you know, do this whole political thing. You know, when are you going to take off? You know, and she said that when I told her that, she didn't say, oh, no, you can't do that. You're a girl, or you can, you know, you can't, you know, what else do you want to be? What else do you want to do? And she said, I said, OK. And the things that you did in life, I made it happen. I knew what you wanted to be when you were 3. So, you know, when you got into politics and everything, when you were a little older than 3, all the stuff, she's like, I never hindered you, I never stopped you, I never told you you couldn't do it because you were a kid or you were a girl, you know. And she's like, people would look at me like I'm crazy, like, your daughter said what, and you're encouraging that idea, you're entertaining that, you didn't tell her she couldn't do it? And she's like, no, why would I tell her she couldn't do it? That's dumb. No, I believe in her, I believe in her dreams. If this is what she wants to do, I'm gonna do everything in my power as her mother to make it happen, you know. And of course, you know, growing up as an Army brat, you know, my dad being in the military, you know, having an appreciation for the military, the freedoms, the country, I mean, all that kind of stuff, just growing up in that kind of household, you know. But my mom likes to tell that story to everybody now that I was running for office, and, you know, I lost, and it sucked, as losing does. But I was like, you know, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to give up. I know what to do differently. The main thing was that my name wasn't out there. COVID kind of hindered me from what to do, what I could do. You know, I think it's kind of cool. One of the reasons why I didn't put the years on my paraphernalia, the election stuff, was because if I didn't win, I wanted to do it again, or running for re-election. So I'm not going to change my platform. Like, I deleted my website, but they keep the stuff on the server so they can bring it back up when I need it again. I'm going to keep my Facebook page active, but I'm not going to change my platform, because the platform wasn't the problem. The problem was me throwing myself out there. I'm a very introverted person, which is kind of ironic being a teacher, right? But I'm very introverted. I'm very private and just kind of a loner, just rather be by myself. So putting myself out there like that, that's crazy. The fact that I actually ran for election is crazy in itself, and all the stuff that I actually did, you know. But it wasn't enough, and I know it wasn't enough. Like, I know what to do better to win, because I met thousands of people, and I never had anybody tell me that they didn't believe in my ideas, or they were stupid, or they're too liberal or too conservative. Nobody ever criticized me, actually. You know, nobody criticized me. I met a lot of people. Everybody believed in my ideas and believed what I stood for. So that wasn't the problem. The problem was, oh, well, her platform was crap. She didn't know what she was talking about. She didn't make any sense. Like, that wasn't it. So I'm just going to recycle everything. I'm not going to change anything except the pictures on the website when I bring it back up, do some updated pictures. But so it's kind of like that. That makes me feel good that it wasn't the platform. You know, it wasn't what I was saying or anything. It was just the fact that I needed to get out there, and money was part of the issue. Mom's like, yo, I told you if you need money. I'm like, yeah, I want to ask you. And she's like, do you want to win? I'm like, well. So I said, so 2 years, you got thousands of dollars to throw down? She's like, yes. So I'm gonna spend thousands of dollars. Because a lot of the stuff, I didn't do a lot because of money. Like, to take out an ad in our local paper was like, a full page ad was like $1,000. I'm like, no. And then to like do the bulk mail and all that. I mean, it's just thousands of dollars on this kind of stuff. And she was like, I told you that I would pay for whatever you wanted. And so I'm like, okay, I know what to do differently. The main thing differently is to get out there. You know, so I'm confident. I'm very confident that I'm going to win because I'm going to do a lot of things differently. And because my platform and my ideology was not the problem, that's like a sigh of relief that that wasn't the problem. So I don't have to change any of that. It's just how I put myself out there. And I can be an extrovert. I can be an extra, I guess what's it called? It's like a introverted extrovert or something like that. Whatever it is, where you can do it when necessary. Well, this is going to be necessary. So I'm pretty confident that I'm going to win. Now, I do think kind of why I don't want to officially announce it yet is because the husband of the teacher, I think that he might run again. Because people were like, oh, don't rule out running again. He's like, oh, I'm thinking about it or whatever. So I really think he might run again. Even though it all started because, you know, the whole COVID situation. But I think he might run again because he liked it. It's fun running for office, getting that taste of power and, you know, coming so close to winning. And so I kind of don't want to officially announce anything because his wife's on my Facebook. His wife's on my Facebook, you know, like some of their friends, you know, well, she's running. I'm going to run again too. So I don't want to officially announce anything, but plus COVID is still here. Indiana's numbers are ridiculously high. So in 2020, in 2 years, hopefully things have calmed down to where, you know, maybe he won't run. He won't care about the school board. Everything's fine now. It's great. So, but because he came in fourth place. So I came in second to last. And that was 3 seats. So this time it's going to be 2 seats. And I'm running. One of the incumbents is running. And we're not sure about the other person, if he's going to run or not. So, you know, but that guy, since his wife was a teacher, he had a lot of, you know, influence. And he knew a lot of people, you know. So he, you know, I kind of figured, I don't want to be a pessimist, but I figured that he would beat me. You know, which he did. It was only by like, I think it was like less than 300 votes. But I mean, but he still did better than I did because he had more recognition in the community. But I do know that this has given me recognition. I've actually seen people and they're like, hey, I voted for you. I'm like, what? Excuse me? Like being recognized on the street or in the store or when I talk to people, you know, it's awesome. It's really, I feel like a celebrity. It's kind of cool. So I do think that this was a good learning experience. And I am so grateful I live in a small town. I'm so grateful I live in a small town because, yeah, you know, the population has drastically increased over the last 10 years, but you know, I'm glad I live in a small, you know, town, less than 17,000 or 18. It's under 20,000 people. Like the entire town itself is like, it's less than 20 square miles. I mean, it's pretty small. So, but yeah, so I'm really hopeful. And I'm really confident for 2022. You know, I think that, I mean, I do know what to do differently. Main thing is not to turn my mom down when she offers me money. But I do know what to do differently, how to run this campaign differently. You know, and because my ideas and that kind of stuff, the platform wasn't the problem. That's great that that wasn't the problem. And I wasn't running on transparency because of COVID and letting the parents. That had nothing to do with my platform. Because my platform was, it was genuine. It wasn't based on circumstances. Like if he chooses to run again in 2 years, and we're back to normal, quote unquote, he can't talk about transparency and COVID and doctors and all. He can't talk about that kind of stuff because it won't be there. So it's okay, why else do you want to run? You know? So, But oh my gosh, guys, I have been talking for an hour and 20 minutes. Holy crap. So, but yeah, I'm sorry. I really didn't plan on talking this long. You're like, okay, come on, AK. I've listened to you. You do talk that long. You meant to do it. I really didn't mean to do it. I really just meant to give a quick update and talk about the election, because I had a trivia game that started at 9:15 and it's now almost 10:15. So I can probably just watch the rest of it. But I didn't plan on doing all that president stuff, but it was just me thinking about my election, made me think about the presidential election and the just on and just snowballed. If you listen to me, you know how I get. I mean, you know. But I really hope and just pray that this country can heal and unite, and that we can be the United States of America once again. I have hope. I do. On this Veterans Day, you know, I just the fact that we have what we have here, you know, the stuff that we take for granted, freedom to do literally anything as long as it doesn't hurt people. Like, I'm not free to murder, you know, but the freedoms that we have, like, you know, it's just insane to think, like, when you think about it from the perspective that not everybody has that. Not everybody around the world has, you know, the freedom to sit in their house and be on their cell phone recording a podcast. Just something as simple as that, that we take for granted, you know? And the men and women that have died for us to have that freedom, you know, going back as far as Revolutionary War, you know, the protests, you know, back in the 1600s, all, you know, the things that we have today, somebody sacrificed their life for us to have it, you know. And it's very humbling to think about. And then again, you know, growing up in a military family, I was taught this from a military perspective, and then me studying history and politics from that perspective too. But you know, my dad instilled that. He instilled military values, American values, which are military values, basically. He instilled those values in me, you know, growing up. So I grew up with appreciation of the military because that was my life, you know? And it's just really humbling to think about the people that have sacrificed their lives to... for the freedoms that we have today that we so take for granted. So Veterans Day is always, maybe that's the real reason why I was talking on and on and on, because Veterans Day is always heavy on my heart and my mind, you know, for obvious reasons. And I guess I haven't updated in like a long time, but yeah, so I'm gonna go ahead and finally sign off here. My phone's almost dead. It's been an hour and 23 minutes. Holy crap. I have not had anybody reach out to me on the Anchor app. Like, I know you can, like, leave comments and stuff. I have one person that I know listens to me. We communicate on Twitter. But I see that I have listeners. Like, my last podcast, I think there's like 16 listens or whatever. So I would just love for people to reach out, you know. Listening to me is great, and I appreciate everybody that listens, but, like, you know, I want to know what you think. I want to know about you. I mean, I do this mainly so I'm not talking to myself, because I'm not a teacher anymore. I can't bore my kids. I'm not teaching right now. I'm doing school. So I'm not talking to myself, and people are listening. So I'm, you know, I'm really not talking to myself, but I would be, you know, interested to know feedback. You know, if you disagree, agree, what you think about what I'm talking about. Am I making sense? A topic you want me to cover? What I could expand on or improve on? You know, anything. I would love to have some feedback. So you can reach out to me on Anchor, or my Twitter handle is AK AK17033. I had to think about it for a minute. AK17033. So I would love to hear from you. You know, especially if you've been listening secretly for some time, you know, I don't know. That would be really cool to have people reach out to me and, you know, have a dialogue. But okay, so on this Veterans Day, or every day, but please remember the sacrifices that men and women have made for us, for this country, for us to have the things that we enjoy, that we take for granted every day of our lives. Please remember that sacrifice. Okay, so I will talk to you later. Thank you for listening.